Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. We're almost 9 minutes after six. I'm Rick Fowler. It's good to have you with us. Jeff Wolf behind the console. And, of course, Jane Houghton, and our producer this morning. And a lot going on, as usual. The House committee that's investigating the January 6th riot has now subpoenaed former President Donald Trump. They said they were going to do it as they ended their hearing last week while they have issued that subpoena. It calls for the former president to testify either at the Capitol or by video conference at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on November 14th. That is after the midterm elections. A lot of quotes and things from the committee and the subpoena, but the basics are the committee told Trump it wants to ask him about conversations he had with the former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, Arizona GOP Chair Kelly Ward, the longtime confidant Roger Stone, Attorney John Eastman, and former Justice Department official Jeffrey Clark, all of whom invoked their Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination when they were interviewed by the panel. The panel also demanding that former President Trump turn over a number of documents by November 4th, about 2 weeks or so, including any communications he had regarding extremist groups that were involved in the riot. In the past, Trump has said he would testify if he could testify live, unedited. Also, on the legal front, as I'm sure you have heard by now, Steve Bannon has been sentenced to 4 months in jail as the outcome of his contempt charges from the January 6th committee. He will fight that. We'll see how that goes as that plays out in the weeks ahead. President Biden on the road yesterday talking about his student loan debt relief program, and he was all excited and said that one of the appeals courts had okayed it and the Supreme Court had okayed it, and he was all excited. And then last night he had a little problem with a court because a federal appeals court, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, has issued a temporary stay in response to an emergency motion brought by attorneys for several Republicans-led states. Now, that after the lower court ruled that their September lawsuit to stop the debt forgiveness plan had lacked standing, well, again, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals issuing a temporary stay on the student loan forgiveness program. So as of now, it is blocked and it is on hold again. That's one that'll play out in the legal fight in the weeks ahead as well. So some of the things that are going on this morning. Now, one thing that's not going on this morning or this weekend are any big midterm campaign rallies to be hosted by the president. New York Times is reporting that when you look at midterm campaign rallies, now this is coming from the New York Times, President Obama, October 2010, 16 midterm campaign rallies. President Trump, October 2018, 26 campaign rallies in the midterms. President Biden, October 2022, zero. So you have Obama with 16, Trump with 26, and Biden with a big zero. Now, Biden was asked about this. This is Cut B. He was asked about why is no one asking to have you out campaigning with him?
Why don't more candidates want to be seen in public with you, like Mr. Fetterman?
Wear a suit. Where did you buy it at?
What are you talking about?
Tim Ryan in Ohio said he doesn't want you there. Warnock said wouldn't say. Do you think they're making a mistake?
No, there are about 16 there I've already gone in for yet, and a lot more are asked. Another 20 or so. So I'm going to be going in.
An appearance, but it's not a rally. Because you see, an appearance, you can have not that many people show up, and the media is not going to make a big stink about it. If you have a big rally in an auditorium, and there's only a couple of hundred people, then you're going to have a problem. So he's dodging the big midterm campaign rallies. But again, the source of that story was the New York Times. So he was out there yesterday, and he was in Pittsburgh. And it was touted to be a big speech that was theoretically going to address inflation. And he basically spent close to 16 minutes all in with some press questions afterwards, basically spent the time to attack Republicans. The only mention of inflation was when he talked about Republicans and attacked the Republicans for what they would do on inflation. He didn't really bring up anything in the speech to say what he would do about inflation. He talked about reducing the deficit, but that's a numbers game. A million different ways you can look at that, especially when you look at the sort of the tail end of the spending with the COVID relief, and that all factors kind of into it. So he just was out there taking a shot at Republicans. And as an example, cut A is what the president had to say about the MAGA trickle down. Check this out.
This is not a referendum. It's a choice. It's a choice. And the Republican can criticize my economic record, but look at what I've inherited and what I've done, and look at what they're offering. It's mega trickle down. Mega trickle down. The kind of policies that have failed the country before, and will fail it again. And it'll mean more wealth to the very wealthy, higher inflation for the middle class. That's the choice we're facing. That's why I think that we're going to do just fine.
And again, he did not address inflation. Of course, he's all in on the environment.
But just as important, we're going to reduce emissions that could come from the trucks and trains hauling it over by 3.5 million tons of CO2 a year.
Now, the president was asked about crime. Here's President Biden on crime, and it's a very short answer. This is one of those where he was at the White House about to get on the chopper, and it was yelled over to him, and here's how he responded.
Ahead of these midterms, how big of an issue is crime?
I think it's a real issue, and I think we have a great record on it.
He's got a great record on crime? Really? Are you kidding me? Do the Democrats have a great record on crime? I don't think so. But what else is he going to say? He did make a commitment that the first thing he would do if he continues to have a Democratic House and Senate, here's the first thing he's going to do.
Elect more Democratic senators to the United States Senate and more Democrats to keep control of the House of Representatives. And folks, if we do that, here's the promise I make to you and the American people. The first bill that I will send to the Congress will be to codify Roe v. Wade. And when Congress passes it, I'll sign it in January.
First thing he's going to do. 6:17 Saturday morning update. Of course, we have KT McFarland coming up for you. Jim Trusty will be talking with Jennifer Harper at the Washington Times. John Gizzi, White House correspondent at Newsmax.com. Cheryl Atkinson and Tony Schaefer all are on the way this morning on the Saturday morning update. And right now, Al BD is in the WMAL traffic center.
In Virginia, on the outer loop of the Beltway, American Legion Bridge, traffic is jammed up between the bridge and the 495 Express Lanes entrance. On 66 westbound in Vienna, you're going to find it slow between Nutley Street and the Vienna Metro Station. On 95 in Virginia, no slowdowns between the Beltway and Fredericksburg in both directions. Maryland side of the Beltway, it's clear in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. And in Montgomery County on 270, you're not tapping the brakes between the Beltway and Frederick, both northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
For today, we're looking for a high of 70 degrees in the sunshine. Tomorrow, cloudy with a high of 66. Monday, we'll have some sunshine up to 74. Tuesday looks nice again with a high temperatures of 72. Our overnight lows in the next couple of days will be down around 41 tonight, and then we'll be in the upper 40s for overnight lows straight into Tuesday. Currently in the nation's capital, we're at 43 degrees. It is 6:19 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is a Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Of course, the midterm campaigns all across the country. Things apparently looking a little better for Republicans in the midterm races as of this past week's polling. Interesting the way the Democrats in some states are avoiding debates. Now, you know, John Fetterman, of course, the hot race up in Pennsylvania with Dr. Oz. They'll have one debate October 25th. Oz wanted more. Fetterman didn't want any, so they settled for one pretty close to the election. Now, Arizona, a little bit different picture because the Secretary of State in Arizona, Katie Hobbs, has not had medical issues. She has not had a stroke, but she doesn't want a debate. Now, you may have seen Carrie Lake. Carrie Lake is a former television news reporter in Arizona who is running for governor as a Republican. Well, she'd like to have a debate. Katie Hobbs doesn't want to debate. And listen to Katie Hobbs' excuse as to why she doesn't want to debate Carrie Lake.
I think right now it's a distraction. I think Carrie Lake is so desperate for a debate because she is scared to sit down and have an in-depth conversation because it will highlight her level of inexperience.
So Katie Hobbs, the Democrat, says the Republican is afraid to sit down and have a conversation because it will show her inexperience. It makes no sense. That excuse makes no sense. Because the Republican says, I want a debate. And then Katie Hobbs says, well, I'm not going to debate her because she doesn't want to show her experience. It's just a stupid statement. What did Carrie Lake have to say about that?
I am working for the people. And this is where I have a problem with my opponent, my cowardly opponent, who won't debate. A debate is a job interview. And she refuses to show up for the job interview.
Well, it's a job interview. Katie Hobbs doesn't want to show up. So we'll see what happens in Arizona. That race is tightening. You know, oil has been a big deal. The gas prices, and kind of fascinating, you may have heard President Biden came out and said he was going to open up some more oil reserves, take us down lower in terms of what we have for the national emergency supply. And about, what do we got here? This would have been Corinne Jean-Pierre talking on October 4th. So it's about 2 weeks ago when she says, we're not going to release any more from these strategic oil reserves. This is Corinne over her head, Jean-Pierre, on October 4th.
So we're not considering new releases from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve beyond the 180 million, which is what you're speaking about the 1 million that the president announced months ago. We don't have anything more to share, or we're not going to be considering new releases.
Nope, we're not going to consider them until we see how bad we're doing in the polling. And all of a sudden, what she just said 2 weeks ago was now, as of now, is a falsehood because the president has released more oil. No, it's not politically motivated at all. Not at all. No, 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 no. And I've got some great real estate in Florida if you would like to purchase. Now, Larry Krasner is the Philadelphia district attorney. He has been criticized for the ridiculous crime rates in Philadelphia. The murder rate in Philadelphia is up 78.4% year over year. So his murder rates increased 78.4%. The Republicans in Pennsylvania and some Democrats along with them are looking at impeaching Larry Krasner. So the hearings are going on in Harrisburg. Larry was in Harrisburg yesterday, Larry Krasner, the Philadelphia DA, and here is what he had to say about the causes of crime in Philadelphia, and I'm sure you've heard this before.
Our communities want universal background checks for firearms and ammunition. We want a ban on ghost guns. We want red flag laws so that police have the authority to take deadly weapons away from domestic abusers, stalkers, and people who are in behavioral health crises and pose a danger to themselves. We want deep and meaningful investments in prevention. Every student in Philadelphia public schools is funded at a rate that's about half of the funding that is occurring in the counties just across the county line. Now, why is that? Why is that when we know that the funding of education correlates directly to reductions in crime and reductions in gun violence? Pennsylvania municipalities have been begging for real local control.
Yada, yada, yada. We've heard all this before, Larry. We've heard all the you got to restrict the guns. What about prosecuting current criminals? What about prosecuting people who are committing murders in your city and burglaries? And you could prevent every gun from here for the rest of the decade. You could stop selling guns, and you're still going to have a huge crime problem if you don't prosecute. But he doesn't talk about prosecutions. He talks about gun control and gun restrictions and everything else. But there are so many guns on the streets of our cities, including Philadelphia, that if you stop selling them tomorrow, you're still going to have a huge problem for a long time if you don't enforce the law. But he didn't go there. Here's where else he went yesterday outside of the state capitol in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
What we see here is the same old playbook, which is about coded and racist messaging. It's about blaming the biggest city in Pennsylvania with the most diverse population for having the same national struggle that we have with gun violence everywhere.
Okay. Same old playbook. Sounded to me like the same old playbook was the old, we need more gun control. It is 6:26. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Stay with us. In the news at 6:30, the House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol has formally issued its subpoena to Donald Trump. The 9-member panel sent a letter to the former president's lawyers on Friday demanding his testimony under oath by mid-November, as well as a number of corresponding documents to be submitted by November 4th. China's ruling party has now reaffirmed President Xi Jinping's continued dominance in running the nation. That happening today in Beijing. The Communist Party confirmation comes one day ahead of giving Xi a widely expected third 5-year term as leader. And across Europe, soaring inflation is behind a wave of protests and strikes that underscore growing discontent with the spiraling cost of living and threatens to unleash political turmoil. British Prime Minister, of course, Liz Truss, forced to resign less than 2 months into the job after her economic plans sparked chaos in financial markets, further bruising the ailing economy in the UK. It's 6:31. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, I looked at the cameras around the Beltway. I didn't see any crashes. I don't have any reports of any construction being set up yet. Inner loop and outer loop, you're not tapping the brakes. In Montgomery County, on 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, lanes are clear both on the northbound side and on the southbound side. Back in Prince George's County, if you happen to be traveling between the two beltways on the VW Parkway or 95, no reports of anything in the road slowing you down. And on Route 50 in Prince George's County, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, you're at speed. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Sunshine today, high temperatures 70 degrees. For tomorrow, sunshine and a high of 66. Some clouds in the picture as well for tomorrow. For Monday, looking for sunshine, high of 73. Tuesday looks sunny again with a high of 71. In the nation's capital, 42 degrees. 6:32, Saturday morning update. It is the Saturday morning update. Thank you for hanging around with us. Jennifer Harper is with us every weekend. She writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times, WashingtonTimes.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, the midterms sneaking up on us. Messaging. It's all about the messaging. Let's look at the Republican messaging first.
Yeah, let's do that. In fact, I have some pretty promising news there, because there's some people out there that are saying that the Republicans have now come upon a message that resonates with the public. Isn't that fantastic? And I'm going to read you something here from Mark Penn. He is a veteran pollster. He's done polling for a long time, but he's also chairman of Stagwell. That's a global marketing network. He certainly knows what he's talking about. He wrote this as in an essay for Fox News. He said that Republicans are finally connecting with voters on the issues that the voters care about the most. inflation, crime, and immigration, while Democrats are essentially fighting a shadow midterm on issues voters care less about. Americans aren't necessarily acting out of partisanship. They're venting their frustrations with the poor economic fundamentals and the threatened recession. Again, this is coming from Mark Penn. And he wrote this for Fox News, and the title is very telling. It's called Democrats Oblivious to the Rising Tide of Unhappy Voters May Be Shocked by Republican Midterm Wins. And he said, certainly on inflation, crime, and immigration, the Republicans are, again, channeling the voters' anxiety and frustration. And he said, not only is there the typical buyer's remorse, but there are also big kitchen table issues producing an electorate that is overwhelmingly unhappy with the direction of the country and of their own lives. And that means voters facing issues like inflation and crime personally are far more likely to turn on the party in power. So that's kind of off-putting, I would think, for Democrats. And, you know, again, Mr. Penn, he was the chief strategist for Bill Clinton's 1996 presidential campaign, also Hillary's 2000 Senate campaign. So he kind of has a pretty interesting perspective. And one other thing, the National Republican Congressional Committee, they reported on Thursday that 80 of the GOP incumbents and candidates on the midterm ballots in November are women, 33 are Hispanic, 28 are Black, 13 are Asian, and 3 are Native Americans. Their point is that they are in touch with diversity. They're always being accused that they're not. And just one more ad here from, this is coming from Town Hall columnist Kurt Schlichter. He said, conservative diversity, that's nominating a broad range of exceptional people with unique skill sets leveraged for maximum effects, and we're making it happen this election cycle. So that's kind of a reassuring update as the midterms loom.
So how about the Democrat messaging?
Yeah, how about the Democrats messaging? And there's kind of been a buzz out there among a couple of political analysts that the Democratic Party is now relying on the issue of abortion as their primary way to sway voters and dominate the midterm elections. This is not done without risk. And, you know, on Tuesday, President Biden, you know, himself, he promised to ensure that abortion rights would soon become law. And the pollsters are kind of revealing that voters, again, they're concerned about these everyday items like soaring prices and, you know, just getting by every day. And that kind of bolsters the Republican message once again. The media has actually noticed this. According to electioncentral.com, this is a pretty snappy political news site, they say, Biden turns his focus on abortion and gas prices as GOP sees momentum. The Democratic Party is going all in for unfettered abortion for the final 3 weeks of the midterm election campaign. And for some reason, Biden believes voters are stupid enough to believe that after the midterms, Democrats will suddenly have the muster to pass a federal abortion law, even though they can't pass one right now. And this is actually coming from Nate Ashworth. He's the founder of electioncentral.com. He says it makes no sense, and it probably is the least useful message in an election where the top two issues, the economy and inflation, make up about 50% of voters' top concerns. Again, that's electioncentral.com making that claim.
You had a sentence that I had to read four times to believe it. Harvard poll had good news for Republicans.
Yeah, how about that? This is a very interesting little survey here, and this is coming from Harvard University's Center for American Political Studies. And actually, it's a very good group. I shouldn't be that way. But anyway, they found in a poll that voters are more attracted to the Republican platform than the Democratic one. I'll just give you one example of this. They asked the respondents, Republicans want to close the border to illegal crossings, increase incarceration of criminals, reduce or freeze government spending. Does this appeal to you as a program or not appeal to you? And it found that 60% of the respondents agreed that the platform from the Republicans appealed to them. Maybe they didn't even know that. The poll also found out, amazingly enough, that former President Donald Trump has snuck by President Biden in a hypothetical matchup in the 2024 election. And it's not by much, but he still did. Former President Trump won 45% of the support, while Mr. Biden only garnered 43%. 12% were undecided on that. And just a quick rundown also on some of the findings from Harvard. This is among all voters. 66% of them say that the U.S. economy is now on the wrong track. 65% think the economy is weak. 63% say the nation is now on the wrong track. 57% now say their personal financial situation is getting worse. 46% think that the U.S. is now in a recession. And 37% personally feel pessimistic about their life over the next year. Again, that's coming from Harvard. So if you're feeling lousy, there are a lot of people out there that feel the same way. This is a poll of over 2,000 registered U.S. voters.
Been a lot of complaining about polls and pollsters for years, and it seems kind of like they're unchecked, but that could be changing.
Yeah, it is interesting, the dominant role that polls and surveys and so forth have, particularly in news coverage. I mean, I ought to know, I have the poll du jour every day in the inside the Beltway column, but RealClearPolitics.com has announced that it is going to launch a polling accountability initiative. And this is a new plan that they've developed because they want to peek at the ever-present polls, which are in the media, and here's what they have to say. There have been many news stories over the last several months questioning whether polling is broken in the United States. While there are certain challenges in the polling industry, it is not entirely accurate to suggest that polling is broken. Oh, that's promising, isn't it? Anyway, moving along, there are many quality pollsters and media outlets that are doing excellent work in a constantly changing technological and political environment. However, there are also pollsters and news organizations that are doing less than stellar work, and unfortunately, many of the polls from these organizations receive a disproportionate amount of attention. Again, this is coming from RealClearPolitics.com, always an interesting site. They also say to help address this problem, in the coming weeks, Real Clear Politics will be rolling out a beta version ranking polling organizations. That's going to cause some interesting reactions, I'm sure. But anyway, the group will rank pollsters by their performance in recent elections and will, of course, evaluate their performance in the 2022 midterm election in just under a month. And their goal, they say, is simple. Accuracy is the foundational bedrock of public trust. To that end, we will be evaluating pollsters almost exclusively on one metric, accuracy and reflecting the actual results. So we'll see how Real Clear Politics does itself in looking at the pollsters.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Jennifer, as always, thank you so much. 6:43, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning, and then we're back with Jim Trusty.
Good morning. In Virginia, on the Beltway, I looked at the cameras around the Beltway. I didn't see any crashes, and I don't have any reports of any construction being set up. On the inner loop and outer loop, you're at the posted speed limit. Now to 66. Westbound in Merrifield, traffic is slow between the Beltway and Nutley Street. On 95 in Virginia, you're not tapping the brakes between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, northbound or southbound. Now into D.C., on 295, 395, and 695, all lanes are clear, and you're at the posted speed limit there. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Day shaping up and a nice weekend here in the Washington area. We're looking for sunshine today. We'll be up around 71. For tomorrow, we're looking for a mix of sun and clouds with the high temperatures on Sunday of 66. Monday, more sunshine, high 73, and sunshine on Tuesday with a high of 71. We'll be down around 41 tonight, but then we'll be in the upper 40s for the remainder of the evenings through Tuesday. As of now, we're at 42 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:44 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty joins us. He is a member of the Trump legal team. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, and he is the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, always great to have you with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Well, another week of headlines around the FBI Trump Mar-a-Lago investigation, but help us to cut through a lot of what we see and hear, and let's get down to reality, Jim. What happened this week?
Sure. Well, a lot of stuff that I can't talk about, unfortunately.
But at least you're not making up stuff like different pundits and headlines in all of these papers all week long.
Yeah, it does seem like when the books are written about this investigation, most of them will be in the fiction section because there's incredible idle speculation and distortion and sometimes intentional distortion. And, Rick, I have to say that for all the hard work that the trial lawyers put into these things, and I mean the prosecutors as well as us, one of the most frustrating things is the leak, the constant leaking that's coming from the Department of Justice. I mean, they are literally putting stories in the Washington Post and the New York Times on a daily basis. And, you know, as a lawyer on the case, you kind of keep your head down and ignore the press treatment and the leaks that are out there. But it's a sign of a pretty thick culture that, you know, we can't investigate it. The media is certainly not going to identify their sources that are so happily telling them information. But it's another one of these moments where I look back at the Department of Justice where I used to work and I have real concern about the way they do business. I think Jonathan Turley has put some stuff out this week about how he's never seen so much consistent leaking at President Trump's expense by the Department of Justice. And from the inside, I have to say he's got it right. So behind the scenes, there's still plenty of work that takes place, some of which is sealed, some of which is just confidential by its very nature. But really what we're doing right now is going through this process with the special master. The special master, Judge Deary, wants a log of all the documents that were seized at Mar-a-Lago and then different buckets of classification. These are, again, not classified documents, but documents that could fall under various privileges like attorney-client privilege, work product privilege, executive privilege, and then also this distinction within the Presidential Records Act as to whether things are personal or presidential. So we have the same document being looked at from kind of four different lenses to figure out exactly which categories it fits in. And that's important information for our overarching judge, Judge Cannon in the Southern District of Florida, to assess when she hears argument about all of these documents and all of the activities of DOJ. So essentially what we're doing is going through a pretty massive document review, about 2,900 documents totaling maybe 21,000 pages, 22,000 pages, coming up with where we agree and where we don't agree, and then eventually over the next few weeks, submitting some legal guidance to the judge because Judge Deary would like to have our positions in some sort of a formal briefing. So That's a pretty big homework assignment for a good number of lawyers that are on both sides of the aisle, and that's what we're spending at least a good part of our time on as we get through October and into early November.
I want to turn to the Igor Danchenko trial, and I want to venture an opinion here. Christopher Steele and operatives of the Hillary Clinton campaign created a false narrative and a fake dossier that created a cloud over the Trump 2020 campaign and his presidency. It was defamatory. It was false information. And the best case to be presented were two cases of making false statements to the FBI, and neither resulted in convictions. So help me out here, Jim. What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah, a lot. And it really does have that feeling of justice going out with a whimper, not a bang. Look, I've said on your show Saturday after Saturday that I think John Durham is a professional prosecutor, an objective guy, a hardworking guy. And I think he really focused on two big buckets of potential targets. One is literally Hillary Rodham Clinton and the Democratic machine and her campaign. And that kind of played out in the Sussman trial in D.C. And then the other bucket would be really FBI management. You know, what were these guys doing? How politicized was the FBI under Comey, along with guys like McCabe and Strzok and Page? And that played out, at least to a degree, in the Danchenko trial. Look, any prosecutor that spends all his time doing false statement cases is probably not loving life. I mean, that's not the high end of what you expect from a special counsel or really anybody in the business of federal prosecution. And so to see these two false statement cases kind of flicker out the way they did is certainly not a good moment for John Durham.
It would seem to me if you're the prosecutor, you'd probably have some pretty good evidence of the false statements being made, because you have to convince a jury. What happened here?
Yeah, I think it's a variety of things. You know, I start with the broadest, which is that I think that as a general rule across this country, there might be a little bit of false statement fatigue. You know, this became a very popular charge, 18 U.S.C., U.S. Code 1001. It is a felony offense based on false statements to law enforcement. And there's a lot of discretion there. You didn't used to see this charge historically a whole lot, but we've seen it more and more in the context of very politically charged investigations. And so I think that some jurors in general are getting a little leery of these false statement cases. It's kind of like if you have a real crime, if you have a bribery, a wire fraud, a Foreign Agent Registration Act violation, then put it on the table instead of these kind of bloodless process crimes. And you have to think for a moment, you know, if you're a juror, no matter how exciting the indictment reads to us that are kind of assessing it for the media or looking at it out of our own interest in prosecution, when you come in for jury duty for a federal case, you probably are thinking, hey, this might be an MS-13 RICO case, or this could be a major drug trafficking organization. So to hear people tell you during jury selection, this is about a guy who says he didn't talk to somebody on the phone and he really did, may not really grab their attention in the right way. So I think that there's a combination of things that starts with just the general notion that false statement cases are kind of a weak sister to traditional prosecutions. I also think this is a reflection of the FBI at this point. You know, the FBI's credibility, when you look at big incident after big incident across this country, and we've talked about a lot of them on Saturday mornings, you know, the supervisor who allowed the Olympics gymnastics doctor to continue to molest girls because he wanted to get a job with the U.S. Olympic Committee, the behavior of Jim Comey and having a special employee to leak things to the New York Times, and of course, the Strucks and Pages and McCabe. So there's been all these black eyes to the credibility of the FBI. And in the Danchenko case, what they're hearing is a jury being told all of these stories about the FBI being willing to give Christopher Steele $1 million if he could verify the Steele dossier. So the FBI's conduct in general around the country and even within the trial creates some problems for a jury. Now, I think when you go back to the Sussman trial, it was probably the high tide moment, the high water mark for going after Hillary Rodham Clinton or anybody close to her. And if you remember what happened in that case is the defense for Sussman going to the FBI to pitch the Steele dossier as a basis for investigation. The defense was Hillary never knew. And if you practice law, you know that's absurd. If you have a client, you're not going to go to the FBI to pitch a finance defamatory story without your client knowing. But that was kind of the protect the queen moment where the lawyers, Mark Elias and Mr. Sussman, the defense kind of came together to admit a pretty fundamentally damning fact that she would finance this false dossier. But they drew the line at culpability for the false statements because that was an important kind of division between moral wrong and criminal wrong. And that seemed to work, and that struck me at the time that maybe that's as far as it's going to be able to go on the political side of the Durham investigation. The FBI side, I continue to hold out hope that there'd be some real accountability for the hyper-politicized management on the seventh floor over there at the Hoover Building. But again, the fact that Durham personally tried this case and that we're not hearing about other indictments, it makes me think that we're at the end zone and that we're not going to have any additional indictments or trials. But there will be a report, because he was appointed special counsel by Attorney General Barr. There'll be a report that goes to this Attorney General, and hopefully there'll be transparency where the rest of us can see and gauge that report, which will have obviously more information than just false statement cases.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in D.C. Jim, as always, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Have a good weekend.
And you too. 6:54 Saturday morning update. We got the 7 o'clock news coming up with Maria Leaf. Then we are back with John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkinson, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland, all on the way.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.